We begin the current daf Masechtas Nedarim daf Lamed Ches. Begin 5 lines down for the Tam of the Yamin, where the Gemara continues the discussion of the previous daf, and that is a pasuk that we introduced on daf Lamed Zayin and Aleph, which was relevant because of the halach of our Mishnah regarding a mudr, and someone says a neder that person is forbidden to have pleasure from him, that there are certain things he's allowed to do and not allowed to do, and one of those elements came up regarding teaching the person Torah and differentiating between mikra and medrash and other types of halachas. So there was a pasuk that was introduced, and the Gemara continues in the Gadic interpretations of these psukim. So Amar B'chamar B'chanin, he says, Lo yehasher Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu did not become wealthy, ela mipsoi lost in shaluches, only because of the carved out pieces left over from what he made the luches, the tablets out of. Shem, like it says in the pasuk in Shemais, Hashem tells Moshe, psal lucha, carve out for you, shnei luches avon, mekri shayinim, a new set of luchais, like the first ones, because Moshe Rabbeinu broke the first ones, and then they had the second luchais. So the interpretation of psal lucha is psalos and shalcha yehe, that the psalos, I mean the leftover parts of the luchais, should be for you, and as the Rosh brings, that it was made out of sapphire, a very precious stone, and that's how Moshe Rabbeinu became wealthy. Similar drasha, based on this drasha, the Gemara brings the Amar Bias Rav Chanina, says, Lo nitna taira el lamaisho lozare. The Torah was actually only given to Moshe Rabbeinu and his children. Hashem, like it says in the pasuk in Shemais, says, "Ksav lecha." Hashem tells to Moshe, "Write for yourself the Torah." Now, it also has the pasuk we just said before, "Psal lecha." Now, therefore, the Gemara makes the following comparison: "Ma psal lost in shalcha." Just like when it says "psal lecha," means it's for you. Of ksav and shalcha. So, too, when it says that you should write, it means that the writing is yours. So, therefore, really, the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. However, Moshe noig bo toiv asayin. Moshe Rabbeinu, however, had a good dispensation of what's called a good eye. He had this generosity of spirit, v'nosan l'Yisrael, and he gave the Torah to the Jewish people. V'alav ha'kasav ayman, regarding such a person, it says, a pasuk in Mishlei, toiv ayin hu yivayrich. The person with the good eye is blessed, or is the one that gives the blessing, as the pasuk there concludes, ki nasi melach meladal, because he has given from his bread to the poor. The bread is always a reference to Torah, and the poor would be the Jewish people who, without Torah, are considered poor. So Moshe Rabbeinu, out of the goodness of his being, he gave the Torah to the Jewish people. Now, that the Gemara asked, Mas Rav Chisda, quotes a pasuk in Devarim. Pasuk in Devarim says that Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, that Hashem commanded me at that time to teach you. So obviously we see that Hashem commanded Moshe Rabbeinu to teach the Torah of the Jewish people. How can we say that it was only given to Moshe Rabbeinu and his children? So on that the Gemara answers, no, the pasuk is actually two different parts. There's the Va'isa Tziva, Hashem commanded me at that time, and then Vani Lochem. The pasuk is saying that Hashem commanded me at that time, and me, out of the goodness of my heart, I went and taught you the Chukim u'Mishpatim, but it's two different ideas. Hashem taught me, and then L'olam Arashchem, I went and I taught you. The Gemara still asks, but there's a pasuk in Devarim that says, D're'ei l'madati eschem Chukim u'Mishpatim. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, look, I've taught you the statutes and the laws, Kasher Tzivani Hashem Alekai, like Hashem, my God, commanded me to. So we see that Hashem commanded him to teach the Jewish people the Torah. So again, the Gemara answers, no. Aisi Tziva Vani Lochem, meaning, look, I've taught you the Torah. That was because of my own volition. Like Hashem commanded me, where he commanded the Torah to me. But not that he commanded me to teach you the Torah. But the Gemara still asks. It's a pasuk in Devarim that says, Va'ata kisvu lochem es ashir azayis. Now write for you the following song, which is a reference to the Torah. And actually, as the pasuk there continues and says, V'lam des b'nei son, teach it to the Jewish people. So we see that the Torah was commanded to be taught to the Jewish people. And that the Gemara says, no. When it says Hashira Hazait, it's not a reference to the whole Torah. It's Hashira Luchuda, just the song, which is a reference to Parsha Hazinu, which has the song of the Shiras of Hazinu. That song is what was to be taught to the Jewish people. But the rest of the Torah was given just to Moshe and his children. But the Gemara asks, but the pasuk there concludes and says, L'mantia li Hashira Hazait le'ed b'vnei Yisrael. Why should this be taught to the Jewish people? So that this song should be as a testimony for the Jewish people. Now, if only the Shira, the song of Hazinu, was taught to the Jewish people, what type of a testimony is this for the Jewish people that they're going to be held to the task of the Torah when they weren't taught the Torah? Only Moshe Rabbeinu was taught the Torah, but the rest of the Torah wasn't taught to them. So how would this be a testimony regarding the Jewish people? So Rav, the Gemara says, you're right. Of course, the Torah was taught and commanded to be taught to the Jewish people. When we say that the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu and his children, it means pilpula bi'alma, which, as the Rashi explains, it means the understanding and the sharpness. And that's actually why the interpretation come from ksav lecha, that write for you, which was, that's the source of the interpretation that the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. It means the writing of the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu because all the wisdom and the insight are alluded to in the written Torah, in the formation of the letters. That is what was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And him, out of the Toiv Ayin that he had, gave it to the Jewish people. But of course, the Torah was given to them. It's just they didn't have that pilpul, that discourse, which is comes from the insides of the letters, that was given just to Moshe Rabbeinu, but still he gave that over to the Jewish people. Continuing on this theme, Gemara says, Amar B'yechanan, B'yechanan says, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashra Shechinasa. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not rest his divine presence, Ela Al Gibor, only someone that's mighty, V'asher and wealthy, V'chacham and wise, V'anav and humble. V'kulam and Moshe, and all these four characteristics, which is necessary for having the divine presence, are learned of Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Gemara illustrates. Gibor, Dechsiv, wealthy, is like it says the Pasuk in Shema, mighty, like it says the Pasuk in Shemais. It says, Vayifres es ha'oil al ha'mishkan, that he spread the canopy, which are the ureis, which are the curtains that were placed on top of the Mishkan. It was the roof. There was no roof. It was made out of animal hides and different things. Now, v'amamar, and the master said, Moshe Rabbeinu Parsai. Who was the one that hung it over, that put it over the walls? That was Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, chsiv, it says the pasuk in Shema, he said, Eser amis oirich ha'keresh v'gaymer. That the length, meaning the height of the beams, were 10 amas high, approximately 20 feet tall. Now, obviously, if Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that was putting it over, obviously he was very tall. Now, since he was very tall, generally, tall people like that, being so tall, are usually very strong. And that's the source that you see that he was mighty. Another thing we're asked, how do you know that? Eimad Arach, maybe say that he was long, meaning in height, but a cotton, but he was small, meaning in power. He maybe wasn't so strong, he was just very tall, and that's how he was able to put it over. Se'elamin ha'din kra, rather, the source is from a different pasuk. So like it says the pasuk in Devar, says, ve'etfois b'shne ha'luches, that I held on to the two tablets, v'ashlichim al shtei yodai v'ashabim. Moshe Rabbeinu says, and I threw down the two tablets when he saw the Jews worshipping the golden calf, and I broke them. Now, v'tanu lidna b'raisa, ha'luches, that the tablets, archan shisha, they were six tvachim long, v'rachvan shisha, and six tvachim wide, the other in Shlesha, and they were three tefachim wide. And now, therefore, like Taisa says, he had to throw it down with much might when he threw it down, and that's how it shattered. Obviously, that means to say that it was very mighty, and that's how we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was very strong in this holding of these luches and throwing them down, that they broke. Asher, how do we know that he was wealthy? Like we said before, b'salacha, that as we interpreted, b'salas and shalcha yehei, that the sapphire that the tablets were made from, were all the rest of that he carved it out from was his, and that's how he became wealthy. And Chacham, how do we know that he was wise? So Rav Shmuel Damar Tavai, they both say, Chamishim Shari Bina Nivri Bo'elam. There were 50 gates of understanding, of insight, that were created in the world. V'kulam nitnu l'mayshah chasachas, and all of them were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, minus one, which is the understanding of Hashem in the ultimate truth of understanding Him. Like it says in Pasuk in Tehillim, that Hashem diminished him a little bit, me'elikim, which in this interpretation means to say from understanding Hashem in the true sense of knowing Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu got 49, but the 50 if not. But again, that shows us that he was a chacham. And Anna, finally, how do we know there was humble? Like it says in Pasuk in Bamidbar, it says, the man Moshe was exceedingly humble. Amar Rabbi Yechanan says, Kol ha'anavim ashirim hayu. All the prophets were wealthy. Menalan, how do we know this? Mi Moshe, mi Shmuel, mi Amos, mi Yonah, from these four prophets. Moshe, dechsev, how do we know from Moshe? Like it says the pasuk in Midbar. It says, Loicha moy echad mehem nasasi. Moshe Rabbeinu said that not one of these donkeys of the Jewish people have I taken for myself. Now, he was just trying to say about how what a load he had to carry for the Jewish people, and he didn't take anything from them, but still he had to carry their load. Now, Ibaloi Agra, if Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to say that I didn't take it without paying, what, Lafuke man de shokobaloi Agra, what he's coming to praise himself that he didn't steal, in other words, that he didn't take from the Jewish people without having to pay for it? What type of a praise would that be for Moshe Rabbeinu? Ella da filaba Agra, rather what we're saying is that even for pay, he didn't take one of their donkeys, meaning to say he didn't need their stuff, because Obviously, he was wealthy. Although the Gemara asks, no, maybe he didn't take it with pay. It's because he was poor and didn't have money to take one of their donkeys. So element psalacha, rather it's from the drasha we brought before, which was, it says in the pasuk, Hashem tells him, psalacha, carve out for you, which we said, psalos nihishalcha, the carved out remnants, that's yours. Again, that's how he became wealthy. Shmuel, how do we know that he was wealthy? So like it says in the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, it says, hinani, Shmuel says, here I am. Anu bi neged Hashem and neged Mashiach. Testify against, regarding me, in opposite Hashem and opposite His Anointed One. And that is, Asher mi lekachti, whose ox have I taken? V'chamor mi lekachti, whose donkey have I taken? Now, as the Gemara said before, ibechinam, if he's trying to praise himself that he didn't take anyone's stuff for free without paying for it, lafuki man deshaka bechinam, he's coming to exclude from someone that takes it without paying, that's the praise that he's making for himself? Rather, even for pay, he didn't take anyone's stuff. And he was trying to say, I'm clean from any type of suspicions of needing or coming onto the people. Now, that the Gemara asks, again, maybe you're right, he didn't take from other people by paying because he was so poor. But who said that it was because he was wealthy? So, rather, it's from the following pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. It says, with Chuvasah Ramasa, that he would return to his home of Ramah, Kisham Besa, because there his house is. Now that's redundant because we know that's where he lived, so why is it saying Kisham Besa? So V'Amar Rav, he says that it's coming to teach us that Kol Malkin Shahalach, wherever he went, Besa Ima, his house was with him. Meaning, Sham Besa was everywhere that he went, not just in his house of Ramah. Because he was so wealthy, he was able to have all the furnishings of his house wherever he went. Now parenthetically, V'Amar Rav, Rav says, God L'mashenema B'Shmuel, Yisimi Mishenema B'Maisha. The pasuk that we brought regarding Shmuel, which we had these two havaminas regarding them not taking from other people, the testimony by Shmuel was said greater than what was said by Moshe Rabbeinu. Because the ilum of Moshe Rabbeinu exiv, regarding when Moshe Rabbeinu, when he says, when he's trying to show how he's clean from having used the people's things, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Loicha mo echad mehem nasasi, that I have not taken one of their donkeys. Now, the fila b'schar, which we said that the chiddush is that even for pay, but what it sounds like is that he's saying that I didn't give them money and forcibly take their things. Even that I didn't do. Now, but regarding Shmuel, he did even one step further. He said, afilu beratzin loy sachar. He didn't even take their things by paying, even if they were willing. Forget about paying, but forcefully. And the reason being is because sometimes people would be willing because they're embarrassed. Because the great Shmuel HaNavi wants, of course I'm going to give it to you and sell it to you. But really they don't want to. And therefore what Shmuel was saying is, the chesed, like it says the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Vayimru, they said, Lo yashaktanu, you have not stolen from us. Velo yratzai sonu begamu, you have not even taken from us willingly, from the Lashon of Ratzin. And that is a greater thing than what was said by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, look, I didn't take it even by paying for it. Here he, by Shmuel, it was even more, is that he didn't even take it with paying, even if they were willing. Because sometimes people are not so willing, and they're just doing because they're embarrassed. And that's how much Shmuel was above suspicion, even more than the testimony that Moshe Rabbeinu had said. Now, continuing regarding the prophets being wealthy, Amos, how do we know the prophet Amos? It says the pasuk in Amos, V'yan Amos, V'yome el Amatzia, that Amos responded and he said to Amatzia, look, Loi Novi Anoichi, V'loi Ben Novi Anoichi. He says, I'm not a prophet, I'm not the son of a prophet. Ki Boikir Anoichi, because rather I'm a shepherd of bakr, of cattle. Ubayle shikmim, and I'm an examiner of sycamores, type of a tree. Now, the Targum of Yosef, like Rav Yosef interprets the Aramaic interpretation, the Targum, that it's interpreted as are more gise ano. In other words, I don't need anybody's money because I am a master, I'm an owner of many flock. Vishikmin li bishvelta, and I have sycamores in the valley. So therefore, I don't need anybody's things. So we see that, again, he was wealthy, and that's how we know, because as the Targum interprets that pasuk. And finally, Yoyin Dichsev, how do we know that the prophet Yoyin was wealthy? Like it says in the pasuk in Yoyin. V'yitin Schar, it says that when he's running away from, so to speak, from having to fulfill the prophecy of Hashem to go to the people of Nineveh, it says V'yitin Schar, that he paid the fear for the ship, which was the fateful story that he got thrown overboard. V'yirid bar, and he went onto the ship. Now, V'amr, B'yichin Rechon, it says, Shanasin Schar Shal Svina Kula. He paid the fear of the entire voyage of that ship. And Amr Ibrahimus, he says that Schar Shlafina, the price of taking that ship out, Havidal Alofim Dimri Dava was 4,000 golden dinarim, and Yaina paid for the whole trip. And therefore we see that Yaina Hanavi was also wealthy. Now the Gemara concludes this discussion with another statement from Rabbi Yechanan. Vam Rabbi Yechanan says, Betchila Hayim Moshe Lamed Torah Meshakcha. Originally Moshe Rabbeinu would learn the Torah and he would forget it. Until it was finally given to him as a gift. Shenemalik says the pasuk in Shemais, Vayitein El Moshe. It was given to Moshe. Kechalasi Ladaber Ite, when he finished speaking with him, which another interpretation is like a kala, which is given as a gift. That was what Moshe Rabbeinu was given the Torah, that although he was learning it, but he kept on forgetting until Hashem gave it to him as a gift. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah. Again, continuing the theme of the previous Mishnahs regarding the what's mutter for a madr to do for a mudr, that relation between the mudr and the madr, when one person says that this person is forbidden to have anah from me from all my things, what is it that, although there's a neder forbidding pleasure, certain things are still permitted? So the Mishnah tells us that, actually, vezanes ishtei vezbanav. He's allowed to feed his wife and his children. Now, the Ram points out, this is even like the Rabbanan who argue on Chanan, who generally hold that paying up someone's debts is forbidden. And here also, there's obviously an obligation, as the Mishnah is about to say, for the husband to feed his wife and children. But here, the reason why it's permitted is because the one who's feeding the wife and children is doing it because it's a mitzvah, and not because he's paying up the debts of the husband. So therefore, the Mishnah says, Afa pishu chai b'mezainoisan, even though the mudr is having pleasure because he is obligated to feed his wife and children, and now he doesn't have to give them food, but that's what's called an incidental pleasure. That's not what this madr is trying to do. He's not trying to pay up his debts. That would be forbidden according to Rabban. He just wants to do a mitzvah of tzedakah, of charity. He wants to give these people food, and therefore, although that person's now saving, that's an incidental hanah, and that's not forbidden. Now, however, but he can't feed his animals. That's bein tamei, bein tahir, whether it's a kosher or non-kosher animal, is because by doing that, he's actually giving the person pleasure because now he's increasing the value of that person's cattle. Now, Rabbi Elazar, he argues. He says, zanes atameya, you could feed the non-kosher animal, as the will be shortly explained, and the reason being is because the mudr doesn't really get pleasure from the animal, and specifically in consumption, because he can't eat a non-kosher animal. And therefore, he's not really having enough from the food that the madr is giving to him. And that is, will be, like we said before, an incidental hana. Because if he's feeding, as we say, ve'ena zanes atayra, Rabbi Elazar would agree that he can't feed his kosher animal. Because if you feed the kosher animal, the food is literally getting it increasing in his animal, and then he's going to eat that animal. So he's going to really be eating the food from the madr. That's forbidden. But regarding a non-kosher animal, he holds that there's no pleasure because you can't go ahead and eat it anyway, and therefore he could feed his animal. Now, Amr Lai, but the Chacham said to Rabbi Eliezer, Ma bein tamei l'tair, what is the difference between tamei and tair? So Amr Lai, he said to them, like we just explained, Shatahira, because a kosher animal, look, although nafshal Hashemayim, although its soul is for heaven, you can't eat the soul, and it's forbidden, and that's part of what we say, the blood is part of that, it says that the soul is in the blood. Now, however, begufashalai, however, the body of the animal is for the person's domain, which is that the person could eat the kosher animal's meat, its body. Now, therefore, if the madr is going to fatten up the animal, he's going to be giving pleasure to the mudr, which is forbidden. Now, that's why I agree to you by Torah is forbidden. But v'tameya, but by non-kosher animal, as we continue on Talmud Beis, nafsha v'gufal hashamayim, both its soul and its body is for heaven. In other words, that there's no permission of eating a non-kosher animal, so therefore he's not getting any pleasure by that madr fattening up his animal. So that's why it's permitted. Now, Amr Lai, they said to him, what do you mean? Afa tameya, also regarding a non-kosher animal. Nafsha l'ashamayim v'guf shalai. The soul is for heaven, but the body is for the person. The reason is, she'im yirtza, because if the owner wants to, the mudr, harei meichalev dekechavim, he could sell it to a non-Jew who will eat it, and therefore since the madr is fattening it up, he's going to be able to charge more for it. There is a certain hanoi he's getting. More if he wants, he can feed it to his dogs, and therefore he's gaining by the fact that it's fattened up, because now there's more meat to go around, and he has more food to feed to his dogs. And therefore they argue and they hold that it's forbidden both by a kosher and even by a non-kosher animal. Now the Ram points out that it seems to him clearly that according to Rabbi Elazar, that he permits that the madr should feed the non-kosher animal of the mudr. That's only excess food, which is what's called to fatten it up. The reason being is because Rabbi Eliezer holds that since this animal, the non-kosher animal, the only utility the owner has for it is to work, but not to eat it. So therefore, he's not gaining anything by fattening it up. Because to the contrary, by the amount of fattening of the animal, it actually works even less. It doesn't work as well. Now, and obviously Rabbi Eliezer doesn't agree to the fact that because of this incidental pleasure that you could sell it to a non-Jew or feed it to your dogs. Now, however, Ram points out, but regarding the basic sustenance that's necessary for the animal to survive, that Rabbi Eliezer would not hold that's permitted, because that obviously would be giving hanah to the owner by the fact that there are certain debts, there's no tzedakah like it is to the wife and the kids, and rather it would be giving direct pleasure to the owner, and therefore that for sure, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, the Ram says would be forbidden. Now, it's just because the Tanna Kamma says a general statement that a person should not feed this mudder's animal, whether it's kosher or non-kosher, which sounds like in all situations, the kosher one is forbidden. So therefore, the same thing applies to the non-kosher one. On that, Rabbi Eliezer responds, no, not that it's always permitted by the non-kosher, but that there are cases when it's permitted by the non-kosher, even though that you're never allowed to feed by the kosher one. Now, although the Tanna doesn't specify this, the Ran says, what I'm telling you, that when he says in Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Eliezer says that it's going to be permitted by the non-kosher, which you would sound like in all situations, but in that he says the Tanna relied on the fact of what it says in the Mishnah, that Amrulay they said to him, and what Rabbi Eliezer responded back to them, where again from the back and forth it's obvious that Rabbi Eliezer only permitted by the non-kosher animal, only by excess food, which is to fatten it up, and not what's necessary for its life. And because that, obviously, the Ran holds that Rabbi Eliezer would agree to the Rabbanan that even by a non-kosher animal would be giving hanah to the mudder and therefore forbidden. Now, regarding the halacha of our Mishnah, the Gemara brings the following Amarok statement. Amar Yitzchak bar Hananya, Amar Rav Huna. Hamudr hanah mechaveira. If someone is forbidden to have pleasure from his friend because of a neder that was taken, mutr lahasi lo bita. He's still allowed to marry him off to his daughter. Now, Havibar Reb Zeir. Reb Zeir wondered about this statement. But my iskin, what is the case conceptualization of this halacha? When we're saying that it's forbidden, that it's permitted for him to marry his daughter, what's the case? If it's like this sounds like the literal translation of what the statement was, where that the father of the kala, he said that all my things are forbidden to that young man. He can't have pleasure from me. And still we're saying that the mudr, the chasen, could be married off to this man's daughter, meaning he could give his daughter over to this young man. Now the problem is, how? He's essentially giving him over a maidservant to serve him. That's what a young man gets when he gets a young wife. He's getting someone to serve him. So how is he allowed to go ahead? And as the Ran explains, the assumption of the Gemara right now is that we're talking about his daughter that's a naira or younger, which is that it's the father's control what to do with this girl. Marry her off, her earnings, it's all financially related. So how could he go ahead and give this young girl to that young man who's forbidden to have pleasure from him? He's giving him a maidservant. Obviously, it's not a maidservant, but she's serving him, and that's giving him a hanah. So Ella, rather, the case is, b'nichsei chasen asur na lavi kala. Actually, to the contrary, it's the mudr is the father, meaning this young man said that this old man is forbidden to have hanah for me. Now, on that, the chiddush would be that although this young man is forbidden to give pleasure to the old man, still that old man is allowed to marry off his daughter to that chasen, because although the chasen is going to have to now feed that man's daughter, and he's giving him hanah, because now the father doesn't have to support his daughter anymore, so although he's giving him hanah, and that's what Rav Huna is being mechadish, that's still mutter. I thought the Gemara asked, but G'dayla Mizu Amru. We said even a bigger chiddush in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Zonis Ishtoi Vezbanav. If there's a mother and a mudr, someone that's forbidden to have a no from that person, still he's allowed to feed that person's wife and children. The Afa Pishu Chayv B'Mizaynaisin, although that person is responsible for his wife and kids' sustenance. Now, Va'at Amrit Mutru Lahasi Loi Bita, and now you, if that's the interpretation of Rav Huna, is coming to tell us that he can marry off his daughter to that man. In other words, if we're saying in the Mishnah that the mother could feed that person's daughter when she's still his daughter, when she still lives by him, when the father has to feed his daughter, And still we said it's not usur because all the person's doing is a mitzvah and it's incidental that Hanoh that the father doesn't have to feed his daughter anymore. So for sure, he could feed that man's daughter after he marries her, when then as a husband he becomes responsible to feed her. So what would be the chiddush of Rav Huna? Yes, it makes sense that that would be an element of chiddush, which is, although that he can't give Hanoh to that old man, and by taking his daughter in marriage, he's saving that man from having to feed his daughter, so he's giving him Hanoh that way. But that can't be the chiddush, because we said even without marrying her, with the daughter still by the father's house, he could feed her, for sure, when he marries her. So, therefore, the Gemara answers, Lo'ilam b'shenichsi avikala asur nalchas. It's like we said in the first way, which is that the father's estate of this girl is forbidden on the chasin. Now, but then the question is, how could he marry off his daughter to that young man? He's giving him a maidservant, he's giving him anah. So it's talking about ubebitoi begeres. We're talking about by a girl that's already an adult, over 12 and a half, where he's not giving over his daughter. She herself gets married. Umidaita. And that is, according to the first interpretation of the Ran, it's explaining what's the reason why the case of begeres is permitted, is because she gets married of her own volition. Because once she becomes a begeres, her father doesn't have any marital rights in her anymore. He can't marry her off. I'm not getting married. I'm 13, I'm 15, I'm 17. You can't tell me who to get married to. And therefore, that's why he's saying he's allowed to, although she's obviously a good daughter and she wants her father to marry her off, but that's not essentially giving any hanot to this young man, because it's not the father marrying her off, it's just the son marrying this girl by themselves. Another interpretation of the Ran is actually when it says midaita, it's coming to exclude midaitoi, meaning from the chasin. In other words, if the chasin, the prospective groom, is trying to come into good graces of the girl's father because he wants him to influence the daughter to get married to him, that actually would be forbidden, because then he's being mahanim, he's giving him pleasure by influencing his daughter to marry him. So that's why it's saying umidaita. It's only if he's working for her, not for him, because if he's working for him to get them married, that would be forbidden. But if he's coming from just his daughter's asking for his advice and saying, go ahead, that's not giving any hanot to him, because it's not him that he's giving hanot to, because he's not marrying her off. It's the daughter herself marrying her off because she's a begeres. And actually, the Gemara says, Tanam Hoch is similar in the Braisa, like Rav Huna said. And actually, the Braisa first says, Hamudur hanot mechaver, if someone is forbidden to give hanot to a pleasure to his friend based on a nether, it's actually asur lahasla bita. He's actually forbidden to marry off his daughter to him. Now that's because we're talking about a naira or younger. But he could marry off his daughter, which is how how the Gemara explained the interpretation of Rav Huna. When she's a begeres, then he's not giving her over, she's giving herself over to the husband, and then he's allowed to marry off his daughter to this young man, although he's forbidden on the neder to give him any hana. A similarly related halacha, Amar Biakiv, he says, Hamadur binoy. If someone, meaning if a father takes a neder regarding his son, meaning that the father says, I'm forbidden as a neder to have any hanoah from my son. Now the reason why he does this is Latamu Taira, is because he doesn't want his son, such a good son he has, but his son is so busy learning Torah. I don't want my son to stop learning Torah. It's the biggest mitzvah. So I'm taking a neder, forget it, you can't do things for me anymore. I take a neder, you can't do any favors for me. Now, however, Rabbi Yaakov says, Mutur lamalis lechavish shamayim. He could still fill up for his father a pitcher of a jug of water, ulahadlik lo yisaneir, or to light the candle for him, or like Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, he says, litzlis lo yidak katan, to fry for him a small fish. And the reason being is because generally we would assume that from small things like this, where it's not going to be a big bitl taira, that was not included in the father's net. They just didn't want the son to be busy going to the mechanic for him all day, whatever it is, taking him to appointments. That, he said, he's forbidden as a neder, which will be valid. But small things which are not, although that's a hana, but it's not going to be a bit tira, and therefore those things are permitted for the son to still do. Amar B'yechanan says, Hamudur hana mechaber is a similar type of dispensation. If someone is forbidden on a neder to have enough from his friend, but still, he's still allowed to give to that person that's forbidden to have enough from him a cup of peace. What does it mean, a kais of shalom? So, hachar targimu, here in Babel they interpret it. It means a kais shal beis ha'avol. It means the cup. There were certain 10 cups they would drink in the house of mourning, cups of wine. So, giving him that cup of wine, although obviously you're serving him, it's giving anah, but it's a small thing. Again, that was not included in the neder, similar to like the son with the father. But my Rav Amri in Eretz Yisrael, they interpreted it meant koishal beis hamerchatz. It means a cup in a bathhouse. And that's actually why it's called the koishal shalom, is because it's because of darkei shalom, because that was normal where people would give other people these cups to drink in the beis hamerchatz. So those are things which those cups shal shalom are permitted. Now the Ram points out, his interpretation is that it's only if it's actually the mudr's cup, where all you're doing is serving him, that's permitted. Because that's what he's saying, is what the Gemara is comparing to the previous halacha, where a son who is forbidden to give his father because he wants him to be able to learn Torah, where the son is permitted to fill up things for his father, but it's actually from the father's stuff. That's what's permitted, because that you're not really giving anything. And it's just a small little tashmish, a small little serving. And that's what's permitted in the Koshel Beis HaAvel and Koshel Beis HaMerchatz. You're just passing the cup to him, although that would be potentially be considered anah, but those small types of things are not included in the Isser of a neder of anah. Now the Mishnah said, regarding the machloikis, the Tanakhama held that you can't feed the mudr's animals, whether they're kosher or non-kosher animals. And Rabbi Elazar said that no, that it's permitted to feed his non-kosher animals. Now Tanya learned in the Braisa that Yeshua ish uza oimer, he said like the Chachamim, that zan, but he made a disparity. He said that zan avada v'shevchesev akananim, you're allowed to feed the mudr's male and female non-Jewish servants, but v'layasin es behem tov, you're not feed his animals, again like the Chachamim, bein temeya, bein tahira, whether they're non-kosher or kosher animals. Now the Ran points out that he holds that what this is going is on the excess food, which Rebbe Elazar had been talking about, like we explained in the Mishnah. In other words, this that Rebbe Elazar permitted to feed the non-kosher animals, which as we explained in the Mishnah is a reference to excess foods, on that is what Yeshua Ish Uzu was saying, that it's not the case, that even a non-kosher animal, to just fatten it up, is forbidden, because you can go ahead and sell it to a non-Jew. Now, it's regarding that, that is what Yeshua Ish Uz is saying, that excess foods is going to be permitted by the non-Jewish male and female servants. And my time, what's the reason to differentiate? The reason being is because Avodah Vishav Chesiv HaKananim Lemanach Arusa Avidan. The first gear of the Ram brings down is Lemanach Arusa Avidan. Meaning, because the whole purpose of a slave is not to be eaten, it's that he cleans out the house and just for utility. Or he says some have the gears like we have in our Gemara, Lemanach Arusa with a Ches. In other words, they're not, when they die, there's no eating of them. They're just cut open. And because when they die, they're just left and no one eats them. So that's why, and that's why the Ram points out, it's going back on how interpreting Rebbe Eliezer, who the whole het of Rebbe Eliezer was excess food. But obviously you can never give for basic food that you have to feed to animals or to servants, to slaves, because obviously that would be giving hanah to the mudr, because now he doesn't have to feed his servants. So we're not talking the basic food. Basic food, obviously, he can't. Both according to Rebbe Eliezer and according to Yeshua Ish Uzza regarding the avada v'shevaches v'akananim. But why could you go ahead and buy animals? He holds not like Rebbe Eliezer, because you could sell it off. And the fat and extra fat and part of the animal will be good, obviously not for work, but for consumption. But by slaves, he holds that you could give extra food more than the basic necessity. And the reason being is because fattening them up, actually they become more sluggish, they work worse, so you're not giving any anot to the mudr. And the fact that there's more meat on them doesn't help, because no one's eating the slave when he's dying. But behema lepetuma avida, but an animal, when it dies, whatever the situation is, when it fattens, there's utility to it, and people fatten up animals, and although it's non-kosher, you can't eat it, but you can sell it off, or you give it to the dogs. And therefore, Yeshua Ish Uzza was differentiating and saying that, not like Rebbe Eliezer, like the Chachamim, that by the animals, whether kosher or non-kosher, you can never fatten up from the mother to the mudr, but by slaves, yeah, you can fatten them up, because you're not giving the owner any pleasure by the fact that his servants are becoming fatter than what they need to stay healthy and vital.